It is a blessing to be here, and I really mean that, and we're going to talk about that, actually, so those aren't just empty words. The blessing that it is to be at Family Camp and others like this throughout Montana and other places really means a lot. And one of the things that strikes me in these kinds of times is how do you bring a message that's going to be do right by the audience, right, and give you something that is new, right? And after going to bed last night thinking about Steve Doty's message, and how do you follow that, right? So hopefully, I mean, that was great. I always appreciate that, and Steve and his messages. And then we actually came in a little bit late Friday night, so we missed Friday night's messages, but I've been hearing about Matt Hartford's message and been hearing about Phil's message and how they really set the stage for the rest. So I'm looking forward to going back and watching those. But it is a blessing to be here, and it is a blessing to do Interman Radio with Mark. One of the things that it's caused is it's forced me, and maybe Mark as well, I'm not so sure. I think Mark has processed a lot of these things way back in advance. He's really good at making it sound like it was my idea sometimes, though. And so I appreciate that about Mark. But to have to take these big concepts and boil them down to a bite-sized chunk and get them into a 20 to 40-minute episode, maybe things that people might be thinking about that span multiple topics, but you're trying to kind of get it down into something that they can listen to and share with their friends. And that's really what I'm going to try to do today. So there might be some new things, but really, I think this is probably going to be all things that you might already have up here. Maybe you've heard the verses before, once or twice, maybe. But to put it in a context that helps us deliver it to our friends. So we're going to start off by complimenting the audience, because that's the first thing you do when you're speaking, right? Tell everybody how great they are. I'm trying to find a compliment here. No. You guys are weird. You know that, right? You know you're weird. Sometimes it kind of helps to clarify by saying something out loud, a situation. So, lest you take offense into what I just said, there's a reason for that. We'll clarify in a minute. Saying something out loud is helpful. So recently I had an opportunity to get some eye work done, and needed to kind of a special procedure done. It's not real common, but it required some lasers and chemicals and cross-linking and stuff. And so anyway, at the surgeon in Spokane, he's given me the price for this thing, and he's going over all the possibilities and what the aftermath looks like, and I'm just thinking in the back of my mind, this would be a lot cheaper in Mexico. This would be a whole, this got to be. So he steps away for a minute because, you know, doctors, they work from room to room, and they'll spend 5 minutes in one and kind of go to the next. So he steps out to the next room for a minute, and so I get on the phone. I'm scrolling through, and I'd already been looking at, you know, doing some dental work and things down in south of the border or whatever, and something, okay, right, cross-linking Mexico, crossing, all right. So I look it up, and there was a place in Tijuana, and so I was like, oh, this is great, man. Okay, right. So he comes back in. I think, how do I bring this up? Like, how do I bring up that he's selling me on surgery and I want to go to Mexico, but I'm going to need some post-op care up here, right? So I say, oh, well, he goes, well, do you have any questions for me? I said, I do. It's kind of the million-dollar question, really. What do you think about me having surgery, say, in Mexico, and you doing the post follow-up care? He's like, sure, as long as they're this and that, and they have this credential, and they're this and that and that, and I don't have a problem with that. It's like, wow, okay, great. So I said, well, while you're out, I was doing some searching here, and I found a spot. So he scrolls through, and he's like, okay, they have this certification. They're using this procedure. That's the same one we use. They're using that process. That's a patented process. Da-da. Looks great. All right. So great. So green lights. I go home and I tell Christina. And the first thing that she does is she Googles Tijuana safety. And I hadn't thought about that, but apparently Tijuana is probably one of the most dangerous cities in the world as far as kidnappings go. I'm not a kid, so that's cool. And there's drug gangs and violence there, and it's high crime and all that. So what could, you guys can finish the sentence. What could possibly go wrong, right? So she's a little bit nervous, but, you know, in my mind at this point, it's become a little bit of a challenge, right? And then her next question is, well, are you going to go down there by yourself? It's like, well, you have to have a passport to go to Mexico now, so... You know, I mean, if you want to get a passport, and we've got kids here, and we've got grandkids, and all that, I mean, I don't see how we're going to, so yeah, going by myself. And so it sounded really good in the doctor's office until having that conversation with Christina. And then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, maybe this isn't that. But now the kids are finding out about it, like, Dad, are you? Are you going by, you going to be okay? And now I'm starting to get a little bit, it's a challenge. Now I was like, yeah, I'm going to, what do you mean? What, do I look vulnerable? I mean, come on. So ended up going down there. And TJ's a different place. Tijuana, they call it TJ for short, different place. But I get there and the culture is different. But we'll get to that in just a sec. So fly down, and what you can do when you get to Tijuana is you can actually, or Mexico in a lot of places, you can walk over the border. They've got a land bridge. It's actually really kind of neat. And you go through all the same border process. They check your passport and to get in. And so, but you're walking across. So... But I land in San Diego, and so I get an Uber, and I have him drop me off at the border. And on the way, I'm asking him questions, okay? And I had done some research online. I'd done a lot of research, you know, don't do this, do that. You know, here's the things to look out for, that kind of thing. And so I'm in the car, and the Uber driver used to live in Tijuana, like for 30 years. Great. So he's an American citizen now, but he grew up in Mexico. Perfect. And so I said, okay, so what advice do you have for me? He goes, oh, you'll be fine. Just don't drive. Just walk everywhere. Because if you drive, you're a target. Okay. Like the police, they'll pull you over and shake you down. It's like, okay, great. All right. And others will too. They'll see you've got a car. It's like, okay. And that they'll know you're a tourist. I said, so you think they wouldn't know otherwise? I mean, really, come on. But you'll be fine. So, okay, great. So I walk through, and as I'm walking across the land bridge, get to the other side, and there's families walking across with kids and things. So you could tell they were working in San Diego, and they had their passports or work cards, you know. So it was really lit, well lit, safe, and everything. But on the side, there's these vendors, and they're saying, hey, you know, I got something for you here. But there was a cab company. So, hey, cab. So, great, perfect. So I get a cab. And so I hop in, and I say, okay. Take me to, and I gave him the address. I said, any advice for me? You got any advice? Yeah. When you leave your hotel, stay on that street. Don't go anywhere else. And you'll be fine. So, okay, everybody, this is a common theme. If you do this, you'll be fine. Great, okay. So stay on Avenida Revolucion. If you stay on Avenida Revolucion, you're good. If you go off of that, you're a target. Okay, great. So I get to the hotel, and I notice immediately... there's a culture difference. And one of the differences was, first of all, being a gringo down there, and being, you know, obviously, from America here. So one of the differences is that I don't speak the language. So, and that actually becomes an important deal. Knowing the language, kind of a big deal. Fortunately, the people in Tijuana, especially in the area I was staying in, they were very gracious, and they're used to American tourists, and they most speak, or they have someone close by who speaks English. So I was grateful for that. And these guys, they were wonderful. They were wonderful hosts. They were so gracious. But there was definitely differences. So, like, you can see how the priorities are in a society by different things that people say and do. When I woke up in the morning, I was getting ready. I was going to go catch a cab and go to the doctor for procedure. I noticed that the Mexicans that were staying at the hotel, when they would walk past the front desk, they would say, "Buenos dias," to the front desk person. "Buenos dias." Like in America, we don't walk by the front desk at the hotel and say good morning every time we walk by. It's like, it's Super 8, man. I mean, they don't even know you're there or care, you know. But here, it's like, "Buenos dias, oh, buenos dias." And it was very warm and pleasant. It's like, wow, that's really kind of cool. And I went to the pharmacy across the street. They call it a pharmacy. It's kind of an open air. It'd be like maybe a mom-and-pop type Walgreens kind of a deal. But you walk in, and they had cases of water, so I bought a case of water. I also noticed something else, that the young men there, being masculine is really important. Like it's part of their culture. It's a value. I go in and I pick up a case of water, and I'm kind of putting it on my shoulder. I'm getting ready to walk out after paying for it. There's a couple of young guys standing there. They got their shades on. They're kind of doing this number. And they're standing next to each other in front of the door. I'm thinking, okay, so I'm not sure what this means. I'm just going to walk straight through as if nothing's happening. Let them deal with it. So I just, you know, didn't stop my gaze. Walk right through. But I was noticing that the men, the young men there, acted a little different maybe than some of the young men that we see in America. They were very, well, they had testosterone, man, still. I mean, they were trying to impress girls, you know. And I had a chance to, because I didn't have much to do. I mean, I brought my laptop down there to get some work done and things. But, you know, I'm down there for eye surgery, so how good is that going to work on the, you know. But so I'm watching people outside the hotel. I'm just watching people. I'm watching guys trying to impress girls. I'm watching as people say hello to each other as they walk by. I'm watching as people watch me, you know, seeing if they could, you know, if I'm good for anything, you know, for $10 or whatever. But there was some differences there, and I also noticed that everybody, when they went into any establishment, they all had the hand sanitizer and a thermometer there, and everybody did it. Everybody walked in. The only people who didn't do it when they walked into a business, as far as put the hand sanitizer on, I mean really put it on, and take the temperature, was Americans. You know, because we don't need to do that, you know. So, but when in Rome, you do as in Rome, so like the Romans do. So, and I found myself, like, after walking through, not even noticing it a couple times, the gal at the front counter's like, "Hey, you know, can you please, sure, no problem." So, you know, all right, temperature, hand sanitizer, but they all did that. And I also noticed that there was police everywhere at night. And I also noticed that at night is when things really get hopping. Like at 10 o'clock at night, the bands come out on the street, and they're playing music. These are open-air bands, there's mariachi bands and stuff. And they also had kind of hip-hop playing at some of the clubs down the street. Cars around, people are leaning out the cars yelling. And it's like, man, this is just a different culture, a different setting. And so it reminded me a little bit of maybe what America might have been like in a way, some of the things I saw when I was growing up in Spokane and that kind of thing, but in a different way. I get to the clinic, though, to the eye surgery place, absolutely state-of-the-art, 100% world-class. I get there, and everything was brand new. And you could tell that these guys had resources. But even with that, the culture was still different. The procedures were different. When it came time for me to take my meds to get ready for surgery, the painkillers, they put me in a folding chair in the hallway, and they gave me a little cup, and they said, "Take this." And this cup was half full of pills. I have no idea what this stuff is. But I looked around me, and there's a row of chairs, like 10 people all sitting in a row. And they handed them all these cups to us at the same time, and they say, "Take this." There's Mexican nationals there, and then there's me, and another guy looks like he was probably from America. And everybody, nobody got an explanation of what it was. "Just take this." Like, okay. And they take it. Like, okay. So I said, "Excuse me, what is this? And why am I taking it?" And everybody looked at me like I was weird. You know, I was like, "What are you asking questions for? They told you to take it. Just take it." It seemed like maybe that was a bit of a culture difference. You know, it's like I'm the guy that, maybe it wasn't, but it sure seemed that way at the time. So they got somebody who can kind of explain it. But in America, you know, here, we're so pampered in our healthcare. You know, they sit you in a nice chair and they, you know, kind of, "Well, now here, now we're going to take this and we'll be back in a minute and we're going to give it 10 minutes. And then you're kind of by yourself in a nice private room. There, man, they're lining you in the hallway and they're giving you cups of medicine saying, "Take it." And then they give you a number and they call your number. And now I'm starting to think maybe this wasn't a good idea, you know. But when you got into the surgery part, it was very professional. It went really well. But it was the highlight there was there were some differences in the culture. Seth Godin, who's a business writer, he's kind of a maybe partly philosopher, societal. He watches society, but he applies that to the business world. Earlier in the 2000s, he wrote a book called Tribes. Anybody heard of it? Tribes. What Seth is really contemplating here and putting forward is that the world is dividing itself into small groups of people that identify and rally around a cause. And that's always kind of been the case, but the difference is that they're exclusive. So what happens is that as people join a tribe, they do it based on a common cause, but they kind of do it in a way that's like, this is us against them. This is our tribe. And we see it all the time. So we see it in politics, right? I mean, some of us, we look back and we say, "Hey, I remember the days when Tip O'Neill was the Speaker of the House and Ronald Reagan was president. Tip O'Neill was a liberal Democrat. Ronald Reagan was somewhat conservative Republican, okay? And they used to fight politically, just go at it, trying to win, one-up each other and all that. But at the end of the day, they were friends. They would go out afterwards. They'd probably go out for a beer. You know, and they truly loved one another. But today, it's not that way. See, today, if you're in this tribe, you're at war with that tribe. You can't be on this side of the aisle and reach across the aisle. There is none of that. We see it with voters. You know, you've got Trump supporters. You know, and the Trump supporters, you know, them, they're liberals, I tell you, they're... But then you get the guys that are on the other side, like, those Trump supporters are a bunch of knuckle-dragging Neanderthals, you know. But we're broken into tribes, and it's like this. But that actually has happened in every aspect of our society. And within each tribe, there's a culture difference. There's a culture difference. If you go to a tribe, say you're on a college campus and you're going to a group of environmentalists, you're wanting to join an environmentalist group, you're not going to act the same way that you would act if you went to a Trump rally. Fair statement? Probably right. Okay? There's a culture difference. When it comes to the church, there's always been a culture difference. And the difference today, though, is that when it comes to the church, as far as the part that we're involved in, there are other tribes out there that are trying to convince us that we're weird. That we're weird. Because tribes compete with one another for resources. People, in particular, right? So everybody wants to recruit. Everyone wants to recruit. So what we can do is we can talk bad about that tribe and make them feel bad about themselves. All right? And we can kind of chip away at the edges. But you guys, you know you're weird. Sometimes if you say things out loud, it helps clarify. So let's do that. Just like going to Tijuana for surgery, let's try that here. Why do I say we're weird? How many people here drove hundreds of miles or flew thousands of miles to spend a major holiday weekend in a carnival tent listening to messages about prophecy? We did! You know what that makes us as far as the world's concerned? Weird! Guys, we're weird! And that's okay! But from other people's perspectives, like, that's kind of odd. Isn't that kind of weird? Yeah, it kind of is. You know, I'm talking to the guys at work. Hey, what do you guys got going on this weekend? Oh, we're heading over to our annual family camp for church. We go there every year. It's like, you go over there a lot, don't you? Yeah, we do. Like, you go over there, like, a lot. Yeah, we do. You know, like almost, like, it seems like every weekend. It's like, well, it's not every weekend, but, like, yeah, it's like, don't you have any friends here? Weird. We'll put that on a hold for just a second here. But if any of you guys have family or friends that are in other churches, you know that those whispers are out there. Right? The weirdness. Let's get it out of the table. I had a conversation with someone recently that I just really appreciate them being honest with me. It was such a blessing. And they came at it in a way that I think they were being genuine. And they said, isn't it a little bit odd that you go to Montana all the time for fellowship? Yeah. From your perspective, I could see that. Yeah. Gave an opportunity to explain a little bit more, though. But isn't it a little bit odd that, this person didn't say this now, but taking the next step here, isn't it a little bit odd that you guys talk about being perfect, you know, being perfect, perfect, perfect all the time, and no one else really seems to see, isn't that kind of odd? And what they're really wanting to say isn't that odd. What they're really wanting to say is, you're involved in some wacko movement, man, and that's really what they're wanting to say. But they're being nice. Isn't that odd? We'll put that on hold for just a minute. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. We're going to spend some time in Ephesians 5 today. Let me check the time, see how much time I've still got left. Actually, somebody, can you guys, someone tell me the time? 7:30, thank you. Okay. All right, Ephesians chapter 5. We're going to read 1 through 17. Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma. But do not let immorality or any impurity or greed even be named among you as is proper among the saints. And there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which is not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know with certainty, that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore do not be partakers with them. For you were formerly darkness, but now you are light. In the Lord, walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists of all goodness and righteousness and truth. Trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. And do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. For it is disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done to by them in secret. But all things become visible when they are exposed by the light. For everything that becomes visible is light. For this reason it says, awake, sleeper, and rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. You know what makes us weird? We believe that passage. That's what makes us weird. If you're to boil it all down, we believe what Paul is telling us here in Ephesians chapter 5. Now you think, well, that doesn't make us weird. Everybody believes that, don't they? Anybody who goes to church believes that. We'll see that in just a minute. That makes us weird. We'll get into that. Verse 1, right off the bat, what does it say? Be what? Be imitators of God. Be imitators of God. Well, you need to try. That's what that means. It means you need to try and stuff. Like, whatever. Yeah, it doesn't say try. It says be. And I'm thankful that he actually expands on that a little bit in the next verse, because he tells us how much we need to try. Well, like, you need to try kind of hard, you know, to look good and everything. But no. What does he say? He says, be imitators of God and walk in love, just as what? Christ loved. And he sacrificed himself. That's how much we need to imitate God. That's how much. Not like, well, got to try. Okay. Turned to the wrong page of my notes. Let me go back. Just like flipped over too far. Just a minute, guys. Okay. So if you go to 2 Corinthians 5:20, we're not going to turn there for time. But it says, be reconciled to God. It doesn't say try. It says be reconciled to God. What if we put the word try in there? Well, you got to try to be reconciled to God and stuff. Like, no, that's not what it says. It says be reconciled to God. Be imitators of God. Okay? So I'm not a Greek scholar, but I'm grateful that he does give us the definition in verse 2. And then you can say, well, it says, it's just talking about like love, you know, like love and stuff. Like Matthew 5:48, you know, it's like when it says, be perfect as your Father in heaven's perfect. That's just really talking about like love, you know, and stuff. So it's like, that's not really being perfect. That's just talking about love. Okay, guys. So what else is there when it comes to being perfect? What else is there? Romans 13:10 says that love fulfills the what? It fulfills the law. What else is there? As we grow in our love of God and others, which is the commandment all wrapped up, love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. That's the commandments wrapped up. If we do that, as we become more like Christ through beholding him in a mirror, and we're transformed to his image, like Steve Doty was talking about last night, the process, the system. As we do that, we love people more. And when that happens, something happens to us. Things change. Things change. We become like Christ. We imitate God. Just like in Matthew 5, just like back in Ephesians chapter 5. And at some point, when we're talking to our neighbors, instead of trying to, you know, show them we're really cool by showing them the new Traeger grill I got, and hey, this is like, and all that, at some point, we start having a different conversation. We think, okay, what can I do to turn this conversation into a profitable one for his soul? What can I do to be a better witness? At some point, we stop worrying about whether or not the edge on our lawn is perfect because of our own ego, but we start thinking more along the lines of, how can I be a better neighbor to my neighbors? And maybe we live in a neighborhood where there's a homeowners association, and you got to keep the edge perfect, and that's being a good neighbor. Then be a good neighbor. be a great neighbor. You know, maybe the neighbors are into, you know, that kind of thing, and you need to keep your place up so that you're not that guy on the block, right? Nobody wants to be that guy. But it's for a different reason. It's not so that you've got the perfect edge or the perfectly green grass. It's because we want to be a better witness to that person. What is that? That's love. That's becoming like Christ. At some point, when we're talking to other moms about our kids, at some point, we realize I'm talking to a mom with kids who has needs. And at some point, instead of one-upping that mom's kid stories with our own kid stories, we're looking for ways to relate to them so that we can turn that conversation into a spiritual one. We're looking for ways to serve that mom. Why? Because we're being transformed into Christ's image through the process that everybody has detailed so well for us. Through that process, and we're learning to love like He loved. At some point, when we're hanging out with our coworkers and they want to go out after work for a few drinks, at some point, we're not asking the question, well, is it okay if I drink? We're asking the question, what can I do to be the best witness possible for these guys, to have great conversations with them, to have a study, to open up doors to have a study? See, our questions change. Our thought processes change as we become transformed into the image of Christ. At some point, we're asking those questions in everything that we do. When we go to work, at some point, instead of trying to be all macho with the guys to prove that you're a man, at some point, we start thinking, what can I do in my work habits to be the best example possible for these guys so that I glorify Christ and I can have open doors for study? At some point, that thought process changes. This is the process of looking into the mirror and becoming like Christ. Whereas a dad may have at one time blown off his kids because of work, been there a lot. Now when the kids say, hey, dad, you want to do this? We think twice. Okay, this person's asking me for time here. This is important. I need to connect with this person because I want to have open doors with them and relationship with them when it comes to raising a Christian here. That thought process changes over time. By the way, dads, if you ever find yourself in that situation, kid wants to throw the ball with you, throw the ball. There'll come a time when they don't ask you anymore. You know, take it. Dad, can you tell me a story? You know, you can't always drop everything. Like, you can't always, but that thought process, what can I do to connect? What can I do to tie a string? What can I do so that for their soul down the road, what can I do today to make those connections? See, our thought processes, they change. So as we go through Ephesians chapter 5, you know, you go through verses 3 through 5, it's kind of a laundry list of don't do's and do's. But then you get down to verse 6. It says, let no one deceive you with what? With what? With empty words. We're going to divide ourselves into a couple tribes here right now. So everybody stand up for a sec. Woo! We got the audience participation thing going on. All right. So we're going to divide it right here with Mr. Sutton because you are to the right of the pole. And so everybody right of the pole, you're going to be in a tribe A. Everybody to the left of the pole, you're in tribe B. Okay, so tribe B, raise your hand. Okay, now say tribe B. All right, good. Tribe A. Tribe A. Okay, excellent. Okay, so now tribe A, you're going to be, which one are you going to be? Okay, you're going to be our excuse makers, okay? But you have to do this with some enthusiasm, like an excuse maker would. Now, you can all do it in your own way. I like to use the word well when I start, well, okay? But you don't have to do that. You could say, we're all sinners saved by grace. You could say that. You could say, we're always going to be sinners saved by grace. You could say that. Or you could say, well, nobody's perfect. You could say that. Or you could say, we're supposed to try. Any of those kinds of things. Or you can just say Red Green's man prayer. You could do that too. That's the same kind of a deal. Okay, so, but everybody, I want you to all at the same time make an excuse. We're all. You could say, actually, we'll start with one first. We're all sinners. Just all say that. We're all sinners. Okay? Okay, now we're all sinners saved by grace. We're all sinners saved by grace. Okay? Now this one. Always going to be a sinner, but I'm going to try. Always going to be a sinner, but I'm going to try. Okay. Not much enthusiasm on that, guys, but that's actually a good sign. I'm thankful for that. Okay. These guys over here, you're going to say, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Okay? You ready? Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Very good. Okay, guys, you got your work cut out for you. Okay, so I'm gonna read some verses here, and I'm gonna have some audience participation. So I might point to an audience, and I want you to say your line, and if some iteration of it over here, guys. And if it comes out real mumbly, mealy mouth, that's even better because that's more realistic. Okay, so here we have clarity and definition and enthusiasm, which is also realistic. Okay, so we'll start here in verse. Let's see. Here we go. Okay. But do not let immorality or any impurity or greed even be named among you. Yeah. All right. Very good. Okay. How about another one here? Let's go. Let's see. Think about others and their needs before yourself. Yeah. All right. Good. Okay. Start giving thanks to God in all things, even in public, even saying praise the Lord in front of your friends. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. All right. That's a good sign, though. That's good. All right. Okay. So, are you feeling kind of icky? Kind of. Okay. All right. Okay, wives, let's instead of tearing our husbands down, let's give them some honor and support, even though he's a rascal, although you chose him. He's a rascal. Let's give him some support in the Lord.
Yes.
Thank you. Mealy mouth. Okay, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Okay, how about guys, instead of worshiping sports and having idols, because it talks about idolatry here, instead of putting such a high priority on that, what if we were to take that time and energy and put it in use in making connections with people?
Well,
I like the zags, I have to admit. But you guys, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect.
Well, you know, but they're all sinners. Well, you know.
How about instead of sitting in front of the TV night after night, week after week, entertaining ourselves, we carve out that time and make some relationships with our neighbors?
Well, I'm helping you out, guys. Well, you know, everybody's, you know, we're all sinners, saved by grace, always going to be
perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. You guys can sit down. Thank you. Good job. You know what those words are that Group A was saying? Verse 6 has a name for those words. What does it call them? Empty words. That's exactly what those are. Empty words. Jay, what time do we have? Thank you. Okay, all right. Empty words. That's what those are. When someone comes at us with an excuse of why we can't fulfill Ephesians chapter 5 or any other passage that's talking about what a Christian life looks like, you can remember verse 6. Those are empty words. And they're designed to make you feel weird. What's the next verse say? Don't be partakers with them. Don't be partakers with them. In that just a minute. 1 Peter chapter 1:15 says to be holy yourselves also in all your behavior. It says, but be like the Holy One who called you. Be like Him in all your behavior. Once we start seeing daily life through that lens, it changes how we see these passages. I was having a conversation recently with a neighbor who he's a marine biologist. And he was trained in evolution. His official title is he's an evolutionary marine biologist. That's the official title. And so we were having some kids' fellowship and things in Spokane, and I had bought some mosasaurus teeth. You guys can go online and buy fossils, by the way. It's really cool. Bought some mosasaur teeth, and they're not very expensive. So I thought, hey, his kid's really into fossils and whatnot. So, and his kids are friends with Lucy. So I'm going to go around and show him this mosasaurus tooth. He'd probably like that. Give us a chance to talk a little bit. So I'm on his front porch, and he's talking about that. And his son, first thing, says, that lived 40 million years ago. He knows what the lines are. That lived 40 million years ago. I said, well, actually, this thing here actually probably died about 4,500 years ago. And his dad is like, wait, what? I said, well, this mosasaur died in the flood. And he's like, wait a minute. You, and a shame on me, we've only lived there for 20 years, guys, by this time, 21 years, and we had never had this conversation. Shame on me, all right? But as we're striving to become like Christ, we're making changes in our life, okay? And so it's time to start talking to neighbors if we haven't done it before. So I'm saying, he said, hey, man, actually, he goes, wait, you believe that? I said, yes, I do. He goes, whoa. I mean, literally, he's like, whoa. Okay, so I've never had a conversation before with someone who's intelligent who believes that. And he wasn't trying to put me down. He was being honest. I said, well, you know, if you're interested, I've got some information we can go over that might shed some more light on that. He goes, well, I don't know. You can send it my way, but I'll just tell you, when I look at everything, I see evolution in everything. I see it. And so he was going through the list. And he was going through how at University of Washington, there was a certain professor who spent a whole week debunking intelligent design and tearing it down and deconstructing it. And so he said, but you can send those links my way. I said, yeah, I'll send you some information. I'll follow up with you. Is it okay if I follow up and see what you thought? He said, yeah, you can do that. Great. But he was looking through a lens, and everything in life that he saw around him, he was looking through the evolutionary lens. And it's amazing that once you change your lens and you start looking at things a little bit differently, you see everything differently. All of a sudden, everything around us is a testament to God's creation. And just like in Romans chapter 1 says, so we know Him by the things that He's made. And so it speaks to His incredible design. You start looking at all the different things, and the Institution for Creation Research is great, ICR.org. Creation.com is great as well for giving us all kinds of things like that that tells us that. But you got to change the lens. And once you start looking at it through a different lens, all of a sudden you see it differently. But our friends in the churches around us, guys, that are in the other tribes, so to speak, that are competing for people, because that's what people do. The church is called out. It's ecclesia. That makes us a tribe. Per se. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing being called out. The people around us are competing for resources. They're competing for people. We are too, because we want to snatch people and have them spend eternity with us and God. That's a competition. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. But the ones around us, they want us. They want us to believe that we're weird because we believe the scriptures. But here's the real problem. It's the lens they're viewing them through. It's the lens. Once a person is able to back off and see it through a different lens, all of a sudden everything starts making sense. So instead of disliking them and hating on them, it's our job to love those folks and to be an example and to be encouraging and to walk the kind of life that even though they want to slander God, the thing in which they slander, they would eventually give Him glory because of our excellent behavior. That was a butcher of that passage, but that's a paraphrase. Because I'm running about on time here. But because of our excellent behavior, they would glorify God in the things in which they slander us, the weirdos. Keep our behavior excellent for their sake and for the sake of those coming up once you change the lens. Last story here. So I like to think of myself as liking to climb mountains. Now, there's a particular mountain. You guys might call it a hill. I don't know. It's a 4,000-foot elevation gain. Does that count as a mountain? I mean, like, the mountain isn't 4,000 feet, but you gain 4,000 feet when you're going up it. So it's in North Idaho, Scotchman Peak. And some years ago, I decided I was going to start taking our kids up there. It's some good bonding time, an opportunity as a goal for me to try to get into the shape to make it to the top of the mountain. And so when I'm doing that, you know who I'm wanting to hang around? I'm wanting to hang around people as I'm getting ready to go up this mountain who believe I can get there. That's who I want to hang around. When a person is wanting to run a marathon, who are they hanging around? Are they hanging around a bunch of slobs sitting at the bar having beer and fries at night? No, they're hanging around people who believe in their cause and are encouraging them in that cause. So I'm surrounding myself with people who are invested, who believe it. That's the first thing. That makes what we do here worthwhile. So all of a sudden, instead of being weird, it's not weird to fly thousands of miles. It's not weird to drive hundreds of miles. It's not weird to spend a weekend under a carnival tent listening to messages about prophecy. That's not weird. That's not weird at all. That's the kingdom at work. That's encouraging. That's what we need. But in doing the mountain climbing, it took Isaac at one point in time, and then another point when Amelia and Alice got a little bit older, took them, and all of a sudden, it became really apparent to me that I really needed to lead in this thing. I needed to make it to the top. Why? For their sake. For their sake, because they were at the age to where they weren't sure if they could do it or not. Now, Amelia, now she's out climbing things and whatever, and she doesn't invite me on those anymore because she's going to get their way a lot faster and whatnot, and it's more fun. So, I get it. I totally get it. But the cool thing is that mindset, I have to get to the top because I need to lead them. Kids need to see winners. Heard that at Montana at camp this year. Somebody said it. It might have been Matt. Really appreciate that. Kids need winners. Guys, the people that we're discipling need to see us win. And that looks like the process of becoming like Christ. I had a conversation with a man recently who in 5 minutes tried to tell me all the things that were wrong with our assembly. And he was pretty sneaky about it. Pretty sly. He had some gossip about this person, about that person, about the other person. Oh, and you focus so much on evangelism. You focus way too much on evangelism. Wait, guys, in the process of growing to love God, when we start loving the people around us enough to try to work with them and bring them to God, it forces us to make changes. It forces us to become like Christ. As we're sitting across the table from a person, I'm thinking, how do I make myself worth listening to in this guy's eyes? When we're at work, all of a sudden, how do I work so that I'm glorifying God for these guys' sake? When we're with our kids, how do I act as a dad for these guys' sake? Guys, when we're evangelism focused, that's not the problem. That's the solution.